That's the way we'll do it. Yes, and I'll just swing this chair around here.
That's all you have to do.
There, we're in business.
Why, sure.
And Mrs. Leckwold, I've heard about you.
Have you?
Mm-hmm. Because there are very few women who have run the mail.
Yeah.
And have been a contract carrier for the government with their dog team.
Yeah.
And then you were an early settler in the Matanuska Valley before the Matanuska Valley was a colony.
Well, we were the first homesteader.
You were the first homesteader?
The first homesteader of the Matanuska Valley, and that's the Four Corners.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Four Corners.
So where were you born?
At Clarissa, Minnesota.
In Minnesota in the, what, 1890s? Mm-hmm. And you came here right after, when was it, 1912, 14, something like that?
1916.
Mm-hmm. With your husband?
Yeah.
And how did you come here?
Walk.
Oh, you didn't. Now, you didn't walk all the way from Minnesota.
No, you come on the boat, you know. You come on a train first from Minnesota to Seattle. And then when you get to Seattle, then you have to take the boat and take that up.
What boat did you come up on?
On the Northwest.
On the Northwest?
Uh-huh. And then when we come there, then we had to walk. We had to walk 39 miles to get over to Old Kinnick.
Where did the boat let you off?
Down in Anchorage.
Oh, it did?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now then, how did you get from Anchorage across the inlet?
Across the inlet, we came up on a small train. You know.
I didn't know there were any trains here at that time.
Yes, just a freight train. The boxcar, they would take you in order to get you there.
I see.
And then when we got to the junction then, or down there to the Matanuska. Well, then we had to get off there, and then we had to walk 39 miles I just told you the name of that place, isn't it?
Not Four Corners.
No. Well, isn't that off the district?
Well, you, Old Kinnick. You got to Old Kinnick somehow.
Yeah. Then we went to Kinnick, and then we had to. But when we got there, of course he was in the army, and he was an injured veteran, and he, to begin with, he came from the war.
Well, that's right. 1916 was right in the middle of World War I, wasn't
yeah.
it?
And he came over from overseas, and of course he was injured. And they couldn't do a thing for him.
What was the nature of his injury, may I ask?
Well, he was full of bullets that was running in the tissue.
I see.
And they couldn't do a thing for him. So they... Well, he struggled along. So he wanted to take this homestead. He had got the map some way. And he looked and he said, if I can get back over, I'm going to go and take that homestead. The Four Corners.
Hmm.
And so he did. So he met me, and of course we got married. So we came up. So he said, "Well, what do you think about it?" And I said, "That's perfectly all right with me. Whatever you want to do now, it's up to you. You know what you want to do." And so when he did that, he had no difficulty at all, because the government man came one day. He says, "I think you're the party I'm looking for." "Oh, is that right? What did I do this time?" You know, because I always had an answer. I was taught that at home. So, yeah, he said, "Say, we need somebody to to pick up on those homemade mailboxes on the trees, on the trail there." He said, "We want you to pick up the mail in those boxes for the people." Then he says, "And I know you would." He says, "You'll sort their mail, and I know you'll put whatever they got back into their box." "Yes," I said, "providing they take care of it." Because I said, you know, anybody and everybody could look in the box and then say, oh, well, I'm going to take that and find out what's in it. And he says, you're right. So I says, all right. If they'll take care of their mail, they know that I make this trip every day. Well, I'll do it. And so I did. And I did it then till I fell on my nose.
Till you fell on your nose?
Yeah.
I don't think that's a figure of speech, is it?
No, I took ill.
Uh-huh.
See, the doctor said, he says to me, he says, you know, this might sound funny to you too, you know, but he says, you know what's wrong with you? And I says, oh, I guess I'm tired.
Yes.
And he says, you're tired. He says, are you sure? And I said, yeah, I'm pretty sure. I said, shorten the road a little bit. I said, it'll help me a lot. I said, it won't be no difficulty. And so then he says, well, before I get through telling you, he says, you know what's been wrong with you all the time? You didn't realize, he says, that you was a woman. But he says, you thought you were a horse. And he says, you did work for a horse all this time. He says, what do you expect to be? He says, I want to meet you haven't broke down a long time ago. He says, there's nobody could stand to do what you've done.
I kind of wondered about that. Because how long was it, 10 years you mm-hmm. took care of the man?
Yeah. And
day in, day out.
Oh, yes. The dogs are, at 2 o'clock in the morning. That meant you get up and give me something to eat. And then after I've had something to eat, then we have to be on the road then, 3 o'clock.
You would start out at 3 in the morning?
Yeah.
To go 10 miles?
Yeah.
From Connect, no, not from Four Corners?
From Four Corners down to the junction.
To the junction, and what was the junction? That was
junction, there? What's the name of that place? I even forget that because I...
Well, now, was this on the Glen Highway?
No, it's where the railroad runs up.
Where
to.
The railroad goes through, like Wasilla?
Mm-hmm. Well, it comes to Wasilla and then down there to the other station there. And,
Is Willow? Well, the Willow's up the line.
No, Willow's up.
That's No. Well, now, this was down toward the river. In other words, the station at Kinnick.
Yeah, that's right. And so, anyway, then when I made that, well, I knew his condition, you know. I thought, well, I'm going to get home and help him as much as possible with what he's got in mind to do. So I always managed to get back home 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
I see. So you would start out?
3 in the morning. 2 in the morning, because I had to feed the dogs first.
So you'd put in a 14-hour day on the mail run.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And then you'd get home and take care of your husband.
Yeah. That's right. That's what I did. And he felt terrible about it, but I told him, forget it. Don't hurt me a bit.
Well, except that when the time came that you were tired, it was time to rest.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then when the doctor told me, I didn't know I was a woman, but I thought I was a horse.
Well, in the winter, how many dogs did you have?
8 dogs. And then I had one of those dogs, watchdogs, you know, and on the right side of me. And you come along, bid me the time of the day. And you that look.
It was free running?
Yeah. But it never left my right side. Then I, on 25-foot clothesline, and rope, you know, I had 2 Airedales with a big white mustache and big white, you know, and those little dots near their eyes. And the bear, when the bear would hear the squeak out of that dog in front of me on the trail, I could see humpity, humpity, humpity. I could see that black fur. So I said, well, we got a bear in front. And they, I tell you, they never, and they wanted to, they wanted to go faster than what we were doing, you know, because we're going to get that bear.
The Airedales?
Yeah.
Were they harnessed?
No,
were running free.
They were running on this rope that I had.
They were on the separate rope.
And they were 25 feet ahead of me on 25-foot rope.
Oh,
see?
Right.
So that way, you see, we could clear ourselves very nicely. Because I'd take the gun then and I'd shoot them if I thought that I was in danger, you know.
Now, what kind of bears did you have to contend with?
The ordinary black bear that you got here.
You don't have any grizzlies? Brownies or grizzlies?
No. We never did see a brownie. There were all those brownies in Alaska. But we never know. We had the black ones. And they go humpity.
I know there are grizzlies in the Talkeetna area.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. There are grizzlies around.
Oh, yes. I didn't see them.
But you just fortunately didn't encounter any.
No. And when we come to a turn of a road there on our trail, and there was a slough down there, water and stuff, and if the bear was ahead of us, and that there squeak out of that, those Airedales dogs, they couldn't stand any more of it. They went on the bluff here and rolled themselves down to that mud.
They rolled down to the lake?
Yeah, they rolled down there to that water and muck and mud, and they were down there, and they give him a look, just the same as they say, none of your business.
What kind what time of year would this be?
Oh, this starts the minute that it freezes up, you know, and the snow starts to fly. You know,
I see.
And of course that varies. It all depends what time. Sometimes it starts a little early and sometimes a little later, you know. But we have to get the snow in order to go on the road.
How about the bears going into hibernation? They would go into hibernation for part of the winter.
Well, they had their own, and it usually was over by the mountains. See, where they're away from everybody, where we are in the clear, nobody's going to touch us here. You can just see it on them, that they just had it all figured out that you can't make it up there anyway. See? Being that you could make it up there, well, we are perfect safe, there's where we're going to hibernate.
Uh-huh. I see, on the hillside.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
And then they start coming out of hibernation in the spring?
Oh, in the spring, when it gets a little bit of rain. And the snow started to get soft, and we could get out of there. Well, then I said, greetings, we're going to have some company now. And the Airedale dog knew we would. They were looking for him all the time, you know.
The Airedales were a bear dog, weren't they?
Oh, a bear can't stand the squeak out of him.
By golly, I never knew that. I hadn't heard that
before. But and they're such a homely thing, you know, they've got a great big white mustache, like that. And then over the eye, you know, and then all you can see is a little black dot. That's the eye.
What kind of dogs did you have to pull the sled?
Well, now that, I couldn't tell you.
Were they husky-type dogs, or?
Yeah, they were huskies. There was no small dog in the bunch. No. They were sure a nice team. They were all... seemed to take the same drag of everything.
They pulled easily. They were matched for pace.
Yeah, that's right. And when we said, I say, all right, let us go. That's all I'd say.
How did you get your dogs?
Oh, there were some fellows from the interior. They come down. They had a bunch of dogs. And they said, say, you ought to have dogs. And I said, yes, I want some dogs. I says, and Uncle Sam wants me to do something about these mailboxes that they want to put on the trees. And we will fix you with the dogs. And they give me off the nice species of mothers that they had there. And, you know, all I said to them, they never went against what I had to say. I said, stop or go, let's go. That was all I said. But I said, all right, down. And they all flopped down and looked in the corner of their eye.
They were already trained when you got them?
No, I trained them they were pups.
You got them as pups?
Uh-huh. And, but they were that type of a dog that was easily trained. It seemed like they just lived for that training. And so then, and my husband, of course, he'd cook. He had a pan about so square, bread pan,
big 18-inch sort
of
pan.
And he'd cook fudge candy, and he'd cut a little thin strip, just enough so, that's sweet. And you know, the first time he did that, I said, all right, let us go. And I had to take the harness off and everything off before we go over this little footbridge because it was poles, so otherwise everything would go upstairs in the water. And So he had this, and he the first can he get, and he said, "All right, down." They all lay down, look in the corner of the eye, and he goes home there, give one to each of them, a taster. It wasn't enough. I'd like to have some more. And so they started in. Well, what's the matter? And so he said, "All right, all right." He said, "Lay down, keep quiet." Down, they would. So then he gave me a little bit bigger piece of candy, a fudge. See? And he gave each one. I could take the third shot, but I don't suppose he'll give it to me. So so he said, "All right." And he cooked dinner for them, you know.
Oh.
Well, his pots were all filled with fresh...
Well, I've got a tickle, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And they got a... Each had their own pots, you know. And that was fresh food for them every time they come home. And so then...
I'm going to get a little bowl of water. Got a little...
Uh-huh.
Excuse me. Go ahead and finish that. I'm gonna be right here listening.
Yeah.
Most frustrating.
And so then he, then they, and if we come to the bridge, they lay down so I could take the harness off and meal bags that was fastened to the harness, took that off, and then I took the harness off, put that on the sled. Then when I did that, and I says, "All right, now you go." So Dad would say, "All right, let us go." Ooh, I tell you, you couldn't reach them with a 10-foot pole the way they shot across that bridge and up they went. And then they sit down and oh, they had so much trouble. And he, "All right, all right," says, "Now, lay down. Lay down now. Then I'll give you some more." Then we got one more piece. Well, he said, that's all you're going to get, because we got to eat.
He'd play with them with that chocolate fudge.
Oh, yes. And so, all right. They knew what he said. He said, "No, no more." And so then they got up on their feet, and they would come walking like little soldiers on each side of him, walk down to the doghouse. And each one, they knew their place. They never, "I'll take any of them." "No, sir. This is yours, and this is yours, and this is yours." He trained them, said, that this is your food.
Each dog went to his own bowl.
You betcha. They never went to the other fellow's bucket, I'll tell you.
That was a big help to you.
Oh, yeah, wonderful help. And you know, when 2 o'clock come in the morning, they'd had their candy and everything. But they didn't want to leave the door without he give them a little nibble of chocolate fudge.
Is that right?
Yeah, just a thin little slice, just enough so it was a taster.
Mm-hmm. Just that little bit of sugar. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I never heard of a dog musher who fed their dogs chocolate fudge before.
Oh, yes.
Those were pretty spoiled dogs.
Yeah, but they were so nice about it. And he never had to talk to them twice.
Mm-hmm.
"You sit down." "No, sir." He says, "All right, down." Legs went under, down he went. But they had one eye, just one eye, that they looked in. You know, foxes, see. And he got such a bang out. It really kept him alive that much longer, just by... He had the... Because he couldn't work, you know. He couldn't work like I did. And but that there was something that he took such that I didn't have to do it. And it was kind of
take a little bit of the load off of your shoulders and keep the dogs happy.
Get happy, you know? Yes. And then he got such a bang out of it, you know. He says, "Can you beat that?" Now look at him. He said, "Can you beat that?" And when Dad and I would be talking,
they'd sit up and
they never, I'm not going to have a word of that.
They wouldn't miss a word. They'd sit there very alert to what you were saying.
Well, bet your life. We had to get everything.
Tell me, did you ever have any actual problems in delivering the mail, but in making this daily run?
No. The only trouble I ever had was it was one day there. It had been storming all night long, and she was cold. She was 60 below zero down by the creek. And so Dad worried so about me going, you know. And he says, you dress for it too, he said. So, all right. I started out, but I got up. When I got about 2 miles away from home, and we was up on this bluff here, you know, we're going to start to go down to the flats now, you know, where the post office is and what have you, way down there. And in that opening, you see, it was just open, just like here, you know. There's no protection at all from woods or anything else.
So the wind had a long reach.
Huh?
The wind had a long reach there.
Oh, you're not a kid. So, see, I got dead flesh. Up to my elbow.
Is that right?
And up to my knees.
Is that
That's
right?
Why I got those big rubber shoes.
Your tennis shoes?
Yeah, I've got to have, they're double rubber, for to try and get the bottom skin to stay on. Well, it'd be all right, you know, until it was like your skin should be. But the worst part of it all is it doesn't take much before right around the toenails on the other toe. It starts to peel, and the bottom sole comes right off.
You mean on that one day you got frozen?
Mm-hmm.
What were you wearing?
This here. Not this, but the shoe packs.
You had on shoe packs.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a fur parkie?
Yeah.
You had fur?
Uh-huh. And so that, and my foot gear was good because I had men's socks, you know, went up to here, you know, in those. And but I've frozen so that the doctor, army doctor, he was the one that said, well, I'll be, oh, they said it's 65 below zero, and it's a 60-mile wind.
Oh, my Lord, that was so 120 below or something in an effective temperature.
Yeah.
What, now let's see, when you got down to Kinnick Station.
Then
you,
when I got down to the, so that I could see the flats now, where the post office and Dad was down there. But then The army doctor says,
there was a doctor there, was there?
Oh yes, the army doctors. They were there. They had a lot of soldiers there too. You know.
There was an army post there at Kinnick.
Yeah.
At that time.
Yeah. And so he said, he told the deputy marshal, go and get her. He says, if she's coming, you got to see what a condition she. Oh, excuse me. And you know, when we got. Yeah, when I was on top of the hill, and I thought, oh, if I only could get down this hill now, down on the flat, I'll be all right. But I didn't realize I was froze stiff as a board up to here and up to here.
To your knees and your elbows.
Yeah. And
my
so,
Lord.
So then when we come down there, well, then the,
were you riding on the runners?
One foot. But the biggest portion of the time, I run.
I see.
And because I could give him more push by running. And so then he said that to the deputy marshal, he says, you take over her whole rig and all of that and sort out her mail and everything. And he said, no, I'll take her in here. And he put my feet and my arms together like that. And he had a, you know, those old-fashioned wash tubs that you wash clothes in? He had one of those and then the old-fashioned wringer to wring out your close out of this hot water, and he had this boiling hot water, and he had a little electric stove underneath, so that he had the water there boiling, and he had the bath towels, and he'd wring them out and slap me, and that brought they would turn fiery red, you know. See, the blood was thawing out, and coming to the surface. See,
oh my,
so. So then he noticed that he could feel my bone in there. And he said, we'll slap her another half hour. You don't mind, do you? No, I said, if it's going to do me any good, I said.
Could you feel it?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah?
I could feel a sting where the bone was, where the nerve was coming to life. See, it would just sting you, you know. But I said, oh, that's nothing. So I let him hit me again. So he was hitting me with those hot bath towels. He wouldn't ring. There was quite a bit of water in them left into him, too, you know. It was just, and he'd come down and slap me just as hard as he could. Then, finally, when he saw that I got all red, see, then the blood had thawed out, you see. It wasn't white anymore. That it was just as white as the snow to begin with. But it turned red. So he said, he says, we got the upper hand on the frost anyway. See? So that's how they thawed me out. The army doctor did that. And my husband was home. He was a nervous wreck. He went out and looked at the thermometer, you know. And he saw what it was, 65 below. And he didn't know what to do. So he dressed himself in fur coat and mugs and all. And he went over to the neighbor there, Nofa. And he said, don't worry. He says, she's got a mind of her own. You don't have to worry about her. She'll be all right. She'll be all right. So he said, well, I'll tell you what. I'll take you home now, and you have a good hot soup for her or something like that. He said that she needs that after, you know. So he said, well, I'm going to go home. He said, all right. So he took him home. So he had one dog and a small sled, and he put him on there, wrapped him up in a big fur robe, and he took him up to the house and saw that the fire was good in the house. And fair enough. He had a dinner cooked, you know, when I come back home. And he said, did you have any trouble? No. I didn't have no trouble. And so that Frank Hoffman, you know, the deputy marshal, he had to come up there. He came up and checked on me again, you know, because it was government, you see. So he came up there to check and see if I got home all right and if I felt all right, and if not, why they'd take and put me in a hospital somewhere, you know. And so, of course, he tells the whole story. And he said, you wouldn't tell me that, would you? I said, why should I tell you that, Daddy? No. I said, you got troubles of your own. I said, you take care of yours. I said, and I'll take care of mine. Yeah, he says, I know. He says, that's fair enough. See, I even got a trick knee.
Yeah, you got one of those elastic bandages, yeah. Things on it. So, gosh, and you had to put up with the problems of skin sloughing.
Oh, yes.
From the frozen
legs. Yeah, I sure did. But by golly, next day, I was on the route again.
Is that right?
You bet your life.
My gosh.
Because I made up my mind. If I run in action, that's the finest thing in the world for the flesh.
Well, that's true. Sure.
Because you let it lay dormant, and it'll harden like a rock. So I said, no.
How long were you there at the hospital, in the clinic, when he thawed you out?
No, it was just a day. They found me in the morning. It was early morning, you know. I started from home at 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
And they looked at, you know, and the doctor and the deputy marshal, they all got together. They said, the deputy marshal called me the crazy kid. So he said, I wonder if that crazy kid is on the road. He said, well, he said, what do you think about us kind of being on the lookout? Well, he said, I'm going to have the hot water in case she's too cold when she comes in.
He was ready for you.
Oh, he was ready.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, he had it all fixed. Then he says, you go and get the crazy kid. So him and his assistant and two other men at the depot, they went to work and give. He said, we got two men there that I think would be just the thing, he says, to. And they was on each side of me, those fellows, and hit me by the arm here. And we run. See?
And they ran you into your hot towel.
Yeah. They run me right down then to the hot towel. Down below. They were 2 miles and a half out that they come out and got me.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. They ran in with you, that 2.5 miles?
Yeah, they did.
Well, I think that took an awful lot of nerve, once you got thawed out, to turn around and mush back home again.
Well, but what are you going to do?
Well, you can stay there until it warms up. lot of people would do that, you know. They'd hole up there until it warmed up.
Well, I didn't. I was right back on the run.
That night, that afternoon?
Yes.
You mushed home.
I mushed home. But the deputy marshal said, we're going to follow that crazy kid. So they rode horseback. And they got horses, you know, from the road commission. And yeah. They rode horseback. And they had me ahead of them. And I thought, I heard thump, thump. I was pretty sure it was horses running. I can't see them.
Well, they're out there running along after you at 65 below.
Yeah.
Still 65 below.
Yeah.
They're on horseback.
They were horseback.
And the wind's still blowing.
And still blowing. I was going hell-bent for election up through the woods.
Good grief. And now how far was it from Four Corners down to the station?
That's 5 miles straight.
I see. So you made a round trip of 10 miles on the run.
Yeah, 10 miles on a run. And I had to make that a 10 mile, and then I wasn't through then. Then I had that other, when I got everything fixed up here now, then I had to take that other run again, which would give me another 5 miles.
Oh, what was the other run then?
I had to pick up some mail.
I see.
So I was running, because the people like to see their mail go out, and they like to get their mail too, so I thought, well, that's the least we can do for them, you know. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, the American mail system is really a remarkable thing. The loyalty that people have to getting that mail through.
Oh, yes. I tell you what, there's so many things that would happen to you and me and everybody else. There's something that we should know. And how are we going to find out, and how are we going to get it around to the rest of the folks that's way out? You know, that's what people got to stop to figure out, too. You know.
Yeah.
That's the least that you can do for your human race, is to try your best to help them.
To keep them in touch with one another, in your case.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, and so... How many people did you have to deliver to?
Oh, golly, I couldn't tell you that.
See, in that 5 miles down?
No, I had plenty. I had
20 or 30, something like that.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. The boxes were nailed on the trees, you know.
Well, now, who delivered the mail before you got there?
Nobody.
Well, how did they get their mail?
They have to go to Quebec and get their mail.
I see.
That's a long ways to Tipperary.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. No, I got no kick coming. They were good to me, but they harassed me so much, you know.
They razzed you?
Oh, yeah.
That crazy kid?
Oh, yeah, that crazy kid. They never got over that. Deputy Marshal called me the crazy kid. They got the biggest bang out of that, you know.
And do you remember when that was that you made that run that you got frozen? What year it was, roughly?
Well, that was in, let me see now. That was 1910. I could be mistaken at that.
Yeah?
But, oh, that was an awful year.
What else happened that year?
Oh, there was plenty of it. My, there were so many old-timers froze to death, you know, and it was just horrid.
One of those extremely cold winters.
Oh, that winter was... I'll tell you right now, it was just like when you stick your nose outside the door, just like somebody going with a knife like that, and right in your face. I never felt anything like it. Minnesota was bad, but it couldn't beat that, no.
Hmm.
That was out.
Yeah, the inlet here, the moisture, it can really get cold.
Oh.
It's at 65 below in Fairbanks, it's pretty bad too. But
well, you bet your life it is.
Anywhere 65 below is rough.
Yeah.
What have you got there?
You'll be surprised.
Postcards? Pictures?
Mm-hmm.
A little book?
A little keepsake.
Oh, a picture. Oh, isn't that lovely? That's you and your husband.
Yeah.
That's the crazy kid, a beautiful woman.
Yeah.
Is nice.
That was the crazy kid.
Oval-faced, like me, the doctor told me the other day, he said, well, I see you're still fighting the battle of the bulge. And you haven't won any major major battles lately, you know.
No.
And you haven't won any major engagements lately. Isn't this nice?
That's a sneak picture. You know how they sit there with that darn camera in their hand?
Oh, yeah.
And get you talking, and you listen. And, yeah, that was...
Norwegian?
Huh?
Were you Norwegian?
Yeah, I'm a Norwegian. I can talk Norwegian.
You're a Viking.
A Viking.
A Viking.
Yeah.
That is lovely. And this one here is in the Pioneer Home.
That's a sneak picture, too, you know. This party had this camera on, and as he snapped it, and then I was fixed up all ready for it to go to that big party, a big dance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
By golly, you're wearing those red poppies, and yet these look like they were taken on two different days. They were taken on the same day, though.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. With your white curly hair.
Yeah.
This, you know, when you were young in this picture as a girl, I can't think what movie star it is, but you kind of remind me of a...
I was 17 years old.
17 in that picture.
Mm-hmm.
That was in Minnesota then.
Yeah. That there was snapped off of us.
Well, now, was that your husband in the picture?
Yes, yeah. My dear. That was my dear husband. This was taken on our travelings.
Oh, I see.
He said...
When were you married? When did you get married?
We got married down home, you know, and then started for Alaska.
You started for Alaska right after you were married?
Yeah, well, we had to go the next day.
You did?
Yeah.
How did you decide to set off so quickly?
Because he had to get back.
Well, was he in the Army up here?
Yeah, he was in the Army.
Up here?
Yeah, he was still hooked up with them, and with his trouble of this injury and all.
I see.
And he had to be on deck.
I thought he had been discharged when you got married. No.
Well, he was discharged
later.
To a certain extent, but the Army felt, they still felt that we got to see that what can we do for his health.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tell me something. When you ran the dogs in the summer, when you packed the mail in the summer, how did you carry it?
In the summer?
Mm-hmm.
Well, on the pack sack.
On your back?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I see.
And packing the dogs, too.
You used the dogs?
Yeah, I had dogs of my own, and I have a dog, too. I had one pack on my back.
I see. Put a pack on the dogs.
And a pack on the dogs.
Uh-huh. And you just
set made it out of canvas. Canvas bag, you know, a strap. And yeah, they marched right alongside of me. I had a hook to my belt. And so we trip, we were running.
You jogged?
Yeah.
You ran.
I ran. We had to. You know, the dogs will run. They don't want to walk.
My word, what tremendously good physical shape you were in to do that every day.
Well, sure. And everybody said, I had one fellow, he's a lawyer, and he met me when I came home. Well, in fact, he knew me when I was a kid. And then he was touring Alaska. And so he met me down in Kinnick when we were down there for a party. And so here he was, you know, he was sitting in the lobby. And he said, "For criminy sake, look at this." And my husband looked at him so funny, you know. Why would he say it that way for? There's nothing wrong with me. He didn't think it was in the wrong one. What was wrong? So then he said, you know, he says, "I knew her," he says, "when she was home living with her folks. And I remember, too, you got married when you were just a kid, didn't you?" "Well, sure." I says, "Well, what's harm about that?" I says, "I got a wonderful home. What more do I want?" You know.
Sure.
My husband, he said, "See, there," he says, "now he's catching up with you when you started up from Clarissa, Minnesota."
From where?
Clarissa. Clarissa.
Clarissa.
Yeah. Clarissa.
Clarissa, that's it, Clarissa. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. That was it. Yes, sir.
What was your house like that you built there? How did you build your house?
Oh, we had a beautiful log cabin.
You did?
Yes, the first one was a one-room cabin, see, so that we'd have something to have to live in and the tools and to work with and that, you know. And of course, he could be out of the coal and work inside, too, so that's the way we lived there in the little cabin. But then he built a big, nice house. And we had a beautiful cabin. My boys, they got in Dodge's picture of the cabin.
How many children do you have?
Two boys. That's all.
And they are
here? They're here. My youngest one, he's... wait a minute now. I'm going to tell you what he does. Well, isn't that awful?
Well, you were running the mail about the time they were born.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now, how could you possibly take time out from running the mail to have a baby?
Oh, that's easy.
You just stop on the side of the trail, I bet.
Oh, sure. That's all. Mm-hmm. No, my youngest son, you see, he is, isn't that awful? I can't even tell you what he's doing now. He's got a business of his own.
Here in the Palmer area?
Yeah.
Or in Anchorage?
In Palmer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they were probably born about 1920, were they, or so, the boys?
Something like that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, no. Those boys are... They've been so good to me that...
What was the story you started to tell me earlier? It was about something about the Mountie with you, going up a hill.
Hmm?
The policeman was with you and you were going up a hill. Out in the hallway, you said... Should you tell me the story about when the policeman was, or the marshal was with you, or?
Oh yeah, well, sure. When you come over to get the crazy kid.
Oh, I don't know about that. What was that?
Well, I told you.
Oh, you mean when you were frozen?
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
yes.
Well, I was crazy before that.
Oh, you were?
Oh, yes, I was time and again. He says, oh, look at that cloud. Ooh. I'll bet you she'll be right on the road. Same old story. He says she will stop for nothing.
Come rain or shine.
No.
Wind or snow.
Yeah, he says we had to go and see. So here they come, horseback riding.
Came after you. I see what you mean.
Yeah. Oh, they had a check on me, you know.
Yeah.
And he says, what's the matter with your crazy kid? Do you look at that crowd? He says, you could never buck that storm, he says, if it ever started over the flats. And I said, well, do you think I look like a sissy? What's the matter with you? And then he laughed, and then he'd... and, you know, his poor little wife, she couldn't... Oh, she said, she felt terrible. He was calling me the crazy kid, you know, and the stuff he would say to me, you know. And he says, oh, what I ought to do is put you in the jail over there. He says, that's the only place for you.
Anybody that would set out and run the dogs on a day like this?
Yeah.
That's what
he said. I ought to put you right in there.
Hmm.
And he just did it just for to get me sticking up for my rights. See, I knew. And he, poor Florence, he was standing there.
What was his name?
Frank Hoffman.
Mm-hmm.
And Florence, his wife, he was, you can't talk like that to that poor kid. You leave that poor kid alone. Oh, he says, I'm going to fix her. I ought to take and put her right in the jail over there, he says. The best place for her. And Frank, you won't talk like that to her. No, she defended me, you know. And it didn't bother me the least, you know.
And, did you go over to Anchorage very often?
No. No, we didn't go over to Anchorage until we sold our place. We sold the house that we were living in and a little cabin. And so he said, you know, he says, I think we'll go to work and get ourselves a home in Anchorage. He said. And, because he said, you know, I can't farm. No, I says, I know that, Dad. And so he got that. And we had a nice home in Anchorage.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yes.
When was that?
A big
then?
House.
Big,
the big house is right along in the where the Elks Hall is. It's a big acre.
Oh, right, overlooking, what's the depot?
The inlet.
Overlooking the inlet, looking to the north.
Yeah, and we had an eight-room house there.
Mm.
And so we, but he said that if I don't come back, he wasn't sure when they picked him up and took him down to see if they could do something for him down in Seattle, you know. And he said, I want you to get rid of all the property. He said, I don't want you to worry about anything like that.
He did?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hmm.
And so I said, all right. And I did just what he said, and that's the finest thing I ever did.
Is that right?
You bet it was.
Well, what did you do after that then?
Oh, I lived in a house. I had a small house and then the two boys. And we had an adopted daughter. She was the oldest. And we had six doctors that came up to show the Alaskans they didn't know how to take care of children. And we're going to give them all these shots and show them how those kids has got to be taken care of in Alaska. And you know what they got? When they got through shooting them, full of that junk there, they got wood flesh. And that killed them. So that killed our daughter, and she was a beautiful piano player. She was 17 years old then. And she played piano, violin, and an accordion, and she sang beautifully. And she didn't know she was adopted. The mother called, got the marshals to come and get us 1 o'clock in the morning because she wanted us to take the baby because she says she didn't think she'd live through. And fair enough, that's what she did. She hadn't been a day after she gave us the baby that, and she passed away, you know. And so we had her, well, she was 17 years old when she was killed. You know.
When was that? Do you remember when that was?
Oh, boy.
The 30s sometime.
Yeah. So she...
How tragic that was.
And it was, and it's a funny part of it all. See, the army had taken Dad and had been in this big hospital on the ridge there in Seattle, you know.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And then there's another one down here that they take children that mm-hmm. gets in bad shape. So they brought, the army went right up and got her and took her down there. And Lord help us, he died. And she died 3 days later.
Oh, my. Oh, what a tragedy.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
So my life has not been all peaches green.
No, no. You had the two boys left.
I had two boys. And so they're all very, very good. And they're both married. And my youngest son's wife is the head nurse of the big hospital.
Oh.
Valley Hospital.
Oh, here in Palmer.
Mm-hmm. And then my oldest boy, he's a mechanic on electrical appliances and all that kind of stuff. And it doesn't matter, tinkery stuff that maybe break on for you, you know. Well, he fixes all that.
Mm.
So he's busy. And they're so worried, you know. They'd like to come and take me off a ride, and they'd like to be with me for a few minutes a day or something. And they can't make it because they're just up to here, you know.
Sure.
And my youngest son has got that, and his wife has got that that Tasty Freeze on the new highway.
Oh.
That's their Tasty Freeze.
Oh, yes, I've seen that Tasty Freeze.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's my youngest son.
Oh, my.
And his wife. So that way, and I told the boys, I said, you got to live your life, I live mine.
This is like, well, when your husband and your daughter died in Seattle, then you were out there in Seattle at that time?
Nope.
You were up
no, the army give me orders that we are taking all responsibility and burying your husband goes alongside of his mother and dad that's buried there, and then the daughter next to him.
I see.
And they stood all the expenses and everything for me. They said that I'd had enough. See?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so they did that for me.
So you stayed up here.
I stayed.
You were living in Anchorage then.
Oh, yes. And so I stayed right. Well, I tell you, I wasn't too good myself. You see, I had to have a big operation, you know.
Yes, you were in your 40s then.
Yeah. And so I had this operation to go through. And So I just couldn't see it. Well, the army, they were foxy. They knew that I had to go to the hospital for an operation. They knew that. They'd found out somehow. And so that's what they did for me. They buried my family.
Okay. Well, that's a tragedy in your life, but you certainly made a recovery, and you worked after that, didn't you?
Oh, yes. I worked right to the day.
Where was it you worked?
For the Army.
In Anchorage?
Yes, sure.
Oh, well, what were you doing for the Army?
Oh, golly, I was in the supply.
I see.
Oh, no. I've worked.
You've never had a lazy day.
No.
An easy day.
No. It's nice to work because that keeps you going.
It keeps you busy, that's true. I suppose it's a little bit difficult for you to have such a lazy time here.
You know what? Since I froze my hands, I can't do anything. I can't trust my hands to pick up anything. I won't pick up a thing that would break.
Uh-huh. You know, how about knitting, crocheting? Can you do anything like
I
that?
I can't crochet, I can't knit, I can't tat, I can't do a single thing.
And by golly, that happened quite a while back.
And I can't take a needle and thread it and try to sew a tear or a button or something into my clothes. I can't do that.
Hmm.
See? Mm-hmm. So I'm a lady.
Well, by golly, that's all right. You've done your share. Now it's time for somebody to...
My boy says, Mother, don't you talk like that. They tell me.
Don't talk like how?
When I say that I'm lazy.
Oh, you're not lazy. You're a lady.
And
I thought you said I'm a lady.
Yes, I said I'm a lady, but I said I'm lazy. Mother, don't you ever talk like that.
No, you're not. You're nothing.
But they said, I had paid for mine.
Yeah. Have you been outside at all?
Oh, yes. I went out to see my father before he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
Have you been to any other parts of Alaska?
Oh, I've been to Fairbanks, Nome.
Oh, you have?
And Sitka.
Now, what took you to Nome to see it?
I was a candidate.
A candidate?
Candidate for the convention.
Oh, the territorial, statehood thing?
The state conventions. And I've been to all those places.
The Constitutional Convention for Alaska Statehood.
Yeah.
Were you elected as a delegate? Did you go?
Oh, yeah. This here is concerning, the lodges is the ones that...
No, I don't know what you're telling me. I don't know about that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's through the lodge.
The Pioneers?
Uh-huh.
Oh, the Pioneer Convention.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's it.
Of course.
And I've been to Nome 3 times. And I've been to Petersburg. And I've been to Fairbanks. Fairbanks 3 times.
Oh, my. Are you going to go to Sitka in October?
I don't know. The boys has begged me not to do any more of that, Mother, till you're sure of your knee. They said if you should happen to fall or do something like that, he said you'd have to suffer it all over again from what you did before.
What was the first Pioneer Lodge here in the Matanuska Valley? Which one did you join? Or did you join in Anchorage?
No, I joined in Matanuska.
You joined in Matanuska?
Yeah. Oh, yes. I'm a 30-year Pioneer. I got a 30-year pin from the Pioneers.
You've been a member 30 years?
Yeah.
By golly,
I was that one.
The ivory ring. I was admiring that beautiful ivory ring with the gold nuggets all around it. That is as pretty an ivory ring as I've ever seen.
That was given to me for when I was froze.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
By whom?
Well, by an organization.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. They said that I'd done what I have done and don't realize what I have done.
For goodness sakes, when did they give that to you? At that time?
At that time, after I got back out of the hospital.
Well, when did they put you in the hospital?
Oh, I was in the hospital and had a big operation. You know, I had to. And then I came out. And that operation, I had that before Daddy passed away.
I see.
And And of course it was from overwork. Oh. And I had lifted too heavy. So it was up to me to get myself straightened around.
Yes, that's a problem. Women do lift. Well, that's a wonderful story. I've just enjoyed hearing of your wonderful life and the things you've done.
Yeah, I tell you, I haven't got a thing to be ashamed of.
I guess not, no. And you said the Army had written a book about you.
The Uncle Sam.
Uncle Sam.
In Washington, D.C.
Well, what's the name of the book?
I don't know.
You don't have a copy of it?
No, they were supposed to send me a copy. But I'll tell you what it was. When I hadn't been here, we hadn't been in the valley there. We didn't even have a decent cabin built yet. And here comes a man, and he says, by the way, he said, is your name Matty Lickwall? Yes, sir. I said, that's my name. And he said, well, you're the party I want to see. Who's that on? Well, what do you want to find out about? And so then he says, I just want to tell you something, he said. You know, he says, we're going to have mail all through Alaska now, railroad, on the railroads and on the highways and everything like that. So they said that they wanted me to be on the lookout for the mail. And this, that, and the other. And then there was other things. Oh, yeah. And then they wanted to know about, they said they heard that I've been driving dogs. I said, sure, no dogs. We didn't have horses. And have anything else but dogs. Well, they wrote that. And then, so, he sat there with a little...
Notebook?
No. He snapped a picture of me.
Oh, he had a camera.
Yes, of course, that old flat thing. I always look at their hands, and they laugh at me, you know. And so he was sitting there playing possum, you know, and he took this picture, you know. And so he said, all right. He says, if you don't mind, he says, you might see your name in a book or something like that. But he says, you don't mind, he says, I'll give you this.